Hi everyone, welcome back. It's Jeff Sachs. We are closing in on Masechet Ta'anit. I had very unrealistic expectations. I had thought we were going to finish Masechet Ta'anit, and then after the Chagim, we were going to start something new, and we were going to return to the shul. But we were just looking at the calendar, and it seems this is our last shiur until after the Chagim, because everything coincides: Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, etc. All coincides with Tuesdays. So I don't know. We're going to have to figure out.
Next year is October 25th then.
October 25th is...
That's the Tuesday after the Chagim.
That's the Tuesday after the Chagim. Right. So Mestama, that's the next. So it's almost, it's more than a month.
Oh, so you could start a new Masechus on Hanukkah or something like that. No big
deal. Yeah, well, we don't have that much left. We don't have that much left. I don't want to take that much time. But we will keep you posted about the schedule and location. Location will continue, of course, to be online for those that join us online. But we are hoping to go back to the shul at some point. So let's, in the time that we have tonight, let's look here. We are on Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, down by where the skinny lines end. Omer Rabbi Chama. You see the last skinny line. Right? Omer Rabbi Chama Bar Guria. Omer Rav.
Sorry, you said Kaf Zayin?
Kaf Zayin, 27A, the last skinny line. Remember, we were learning about the Ma'amadot and the Mishmarot, these delegations of Kohanim Levi'im and of Yisraelim. The Ma'amadot of the Yisraelim, the Mishmarot are the Kohanim and Levi'im, and how they would do what we call here Miluim, in order to. Isn't that kind of funny, David? You must have something interesting to say about this. My use of the word Miluim. Miluim is a technical word related to actually to service in Beit HaMikdash, which was appropriated in the modern term, as the army lingo. And now I've just retrograded it back to describe something, a different thing in the Mikdash.
There's a linguist, Gilad Zuckerman, who has complained about this phenomenon where a lot of words that had sacred connotations became used for secular purposes in modern Hebrew. But I thought it'd be a little disingenuous, because the truth is a lot of those words themselves had originally secular meanings. They were adopted for sacred purposes, but they didn't only have sacred purposes originally. And then, you know, it's language is much more fluid than you can say something has to be stuck on one position or another. It seems a little bit extreme from my point of view.
100%.
He mentions Miluim as one of those examples.
Right.
Miluim originally meant ordination anyway.
Yeah. But by the way, of course, you know, Bialik's famous essay, Al Kisui V'Gilui B'Lashon, you know, which is about this topic. So Omar of Chama, Bar Giora, Omar of Moshe Tikein Lahem Yisrael Shmona Mishmarot. Moshe is the one that instituted this whole process of the Mishmarot, and originally he created 8 Mishmarot. Arba mi Elazar v'arba mi Tamar. The two Kohanim, they split up the thing. 4 of the 8 are descendants of Elazar, and 4 of the 8 are descendants of Itamar. Arba mi Elazar, arba mi Tamar. Ba Shmuel v'hemidan al Sheshesre. And then, long time after, in the days of Shmuel Hanavi, he expanded the Mishmarot to 16. He doubled the quantity. Because there were more Kohanim. The families had grown and expanded and branched. Ba David, and then not long after Shmuel, comes David, Vehemidan al Esrim V'Arba. He adds another 8, and now so we've gone from 8 to 16 to 20 to 24, 24 Mishmarot of Kohanim. Shne'emar, and then there's a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim, Yehudi, you'll fill us in on Divrei Yamim in a moment, that says, "Meshnata arba'im l'malchut David nidrashu ve'yimotze bohem giborei chayel b'ya'azir gilad." It's just a pasuk that establishes that David in the 40th year of his reign, that's a short reign, because we just marked the passing of her sovereign majesty Elizabeth after 70 plus years. So 40 years, he's still midlife.
Rob Sachs.
So it was 1 second. So he sets up the Mishmaret, and that seems to be the proof texts that David had done this. Yes, Yehudi.
The proof text here is simply to tell you that this had to be David himself, because in David's 40th year, Shmuel was dead for sure. Okay? So that's the whole purpose of the pasuk. The purpose in no way is to show you anything about the proof. The whole thing is to show this is something David had to have done by himself without Shmuel being present. That's what Steinsaltz says, and that's what Curran says.
Right, but in other words,
it's like a place mark of the type that you mentioned before.
No, but in other words, yes, but in other words, the point is that Shmuel had made an earlier expansion, and then later, David had made an expansion of his own.
What we have to prove is this is on his own.
Yeah, right.
That's what the verse proves. It doesn't prove anything else.
Right, because in other words, 40 years, this
in
is
his 40th year of reign, there's no way Shmuel could have been alive. Shmuel is dead before David even becomes king.
So, well, the Gemara now, there's a few different steps in this Gemara, all trying to figure out exactly who did what when. So Meisvei, there's a different, the Gemara attacks the premise of the previous statement of Rav Chama Bar Guria, and it brings a brisa that says, Moshe tiken lahem liYisrael shmona mishmarot, that Moshe made the eight mishmarot, Arba'a Elazar v'Avraham Itamar, so far so good. Uva David uShmuel. And then David and Shmuel did it together. In the version of Rami Bar Chama, you have three stages. Moshe, 8. David, Shmuel, 16. And then later, David, 24. But here, it's Moshe makes 8. And then in one shot, David and Shmuel working together make it into 24. It skips the intermediary step and puts them together. So that can't rely on the previous pasuk, as Yehudi points out, that pasuk would exclude Shmuel's involvement in the operation. And so there's a different pasuk, also from Divrei Hayamim, Shne'emar, Hema Yisad David uShmuel Haro'eh Be'emunatam. Right? That David and Shmuel, the Ro'eh, Shmuel, the Navi, established this. He established this in their emunatam, is not their emuna, their faith, but their work, right? As they set up these mishmarot. So obviously this is done earlier in David's career that they do it together. Hachi ka'amar, yisodo shel David uShmuel haramati, emidam al esrim ba'arba. And from this we learn out that David and Shmuel working together, so that the history of the mishmarot is a two-step process. Moshe 8. And then later, David and Shmuel working together expanded directly from 8 to 20 to 24. Aside from the history here, I'm not sure if there's much of a nafkamina in terms of when this happened. Tanya idach, but there's a third statement, the second brisa. Moshe tiken lahem liYisrael sheshesrei mishmarot. So from the get-go, it's different. You start off with 16 mishmarot. It's interesting that these numbers, I'm no mathematician, but it's interesting that these numbers are all variables of, in other words, what's the pattern here? Right? 8,
four.
16,
four.
24, right?
Yeah.
Or 4.
Because you start with, the first 8 is divided into 2 4s.
Fours,
and then
yeah.
We just go up by 8 to 24, but we're still dividing them. Question is right. How we divide them. But you're right. Everyone is a quotient of 4. Yeah. The Yerushalmi even raises the issue that at one point there were only enough to make 23, but they couldn't manage that because of this importance of 4. But the other issue here is when you read Emunatam, you're reading Emunatam exactly the way Yerushalmi reads it. Yerushalmi reads, what is Emunatam? Umnatam. Okay. But the Pshat isn't that at all. The Pshat means Emunatam because of their integrity like Ki Be'emunah Haim Osim. In other words, they were chosen because of their qualities, because they could be depended upon to do the job correctly. That's the pshat. But the drash is what the Rishami says, for Ummatam, which is what you said, you know, on your own, but that's exactly correct.
Right. So Tani, the Moshe Tikkun Lam Yisrael, 16 Mishmorot, 8 Me'el Azar, 8 Me'itamar, 8 from each of the two Kohanim, u'kesherabu b'nei Elazar al b'nei Itamar. But at some point, the two teams grew disproportionately. Elazar's descendants prospered and flourished, and there were many more of them, and Itamar's didn't. So you wonder, like, how could this be? But we see this all the time. You know, like you have in families, if you look on your own family tree, you know, the family trees, now they have these computer programs that do them very automatically. But if I remember when I was a kid, I'm sure everybody had to do this for school. You had to draw a family tree. You start doing it neat and elegant, but it tends to get very unwieldy because, in other words, it's not like this idea that like every person gets married, you have one marriage, and every person has two children, a boy and a girl. If that was the case, every family, generation after generation, you know, so the family tree would look very nice and symmetrical. But that's not how reality works. There are divorces, and there are second marriages, and there are step-siblings, and some families have no children, and some families have a lot of children. And so the whole thing becomes uneven. So what happened? The Elazar side of the team had a lot of people, and the Itamar side didn't. So they had to, what do you call that? Like a stock split? They took the team.
It's proportional. It's like the census does that every single year.
It reapportions
every single 10 years.
Right. It reapportions the representatives in the states, because the representatives in the House of Representatives has to stay a set number, and that just gets divided. So states whose populations decline end up losing house seats, and vice versa, right? So kesherabu b'nei Elazar b'nei Tamar chilkum vehemidum al esrim v'arba shne'emar. Again, a pasuk from Divrei Yamim v'yimatzu b'nei Elazar rabim l'roshei hagvarim min b'nei Tamar. There were more Elazarites than Itamarites, v'yichalkum, and they split them up. They divided them up. Livnei Elazar roshim, levet avot shisha asar, livnei Itamar levet avotam shmona. So they doubled the size of the representation of Elazar's descendants. So they had 2/3. They had 16 mishmarot, and Itamar's descendants remained with the original 8 that they had. So that two-thirds of all the Mishmarot were staffed by descendants of Elazar. V'omer, and then there's another posuk. I mean, this other posuk is right there. It's two psukim away.
Yeah, it's a three reversed unit.
Beit av echad, achuz le'Elazar, v'achuz achuz le'Itamar. So one Beit av, one family unit was for Elazar or for Elazar's descendants, and achuz achuz, which let's say that means the proportionally was for Itamar. Now the Gemara wants to know two things. What does this mean, achuz? What does the word achuz mean? In other words, we use the word achuz to mean a percentage. But that's a modern, right? David, when does the word achuz come to mean percentage?
It was in percentage in modern Hebrew. It was first really suggested by the rabbi and linguist Zev Yavetz, but it wasn't really percentage. It was more of a proportion. Yeah.
So when does it come to
mean? He was using it as percent. He was using it as achuz, and then he would say percentage as achuz lemea. That was his sort of a portion of 100.
And then that just gets abbreviated to achuz.
Right. So Ben Yehuda also only mentions achuz min mea, but then it just eventually kind of Lamea dropped off and it just became a percentage.
Yeah, for natural reasons of language expressions.
It was probably fairly recent. I mean, in like the last 50, 60 years, I would say.
Really? Oh, that is.
I mean, yeah, because it was used, but it would say Achuz Lamea. It was just the only idea of it just being Achuz. Like, there's a dictionary I looked at when I wrote about this in the 60s and 70s, which didn't just mention Achuz meaning percentage, only Achuz Le, only a proportion of 100.
Manye. So this pasuk, Achuz.
But in the Tanakh, it means taken from.
Right.
Like an Achiza.
Right, like precisely. Right. Right. That's what I was working on.
So the Gemara asks, "Umai ve'omer." In other words, the Gemara brings two psukim. Now, it could have easily brought it as if it were one pasuk. The Gemara often does this. There's an assumed ellipses in the pasuk. In other words, this is Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Kaf Dalet 24. The first pasuk is pasuk Dalet, and the second pasuk is pasuk Vav. So basically, all we've done is made an ellipses around pasuk hey. But in order to indicate that it's a different pasuk, that we've skipped something, the Gemara says ve'omer, and it additionally says this stuff about Elazar taking one share and Itamar getting a proportional share, meaning they continued to each side continued to have representation in the Mishmarot, but it was proportional. When they started, they had equal population, so they split it 50-50. But over time, one side grew, so now they split it 2/3, 1/3. Right?
I'm sorry.
You're sorry about what?
But my phone rang and it made noise.
So that's what the pasuk. That's what the pasuk means. But the Gemara says, "My ve'omer." What does it mean? What does it mean, ve'omer? Why does the Gemara bring the second pasuk? Why does the Gemara bring the second pasuk prefaced by this additional indication that it's a quote? V'chitema ki hechi din fishe b'nei Elazar. So if you think it means that the descendants of Elazar, they were nefishe, they grew, they expanded, hachanami din fishe b'nei Itamar. So shouldn't it be that the children of Itamar also expanded over the generations? Shmona mi'ikara arba ahavu. In other words, initially there were 8 mishmarot divided between them 4 and 4. Tashma, Beit Av Echad Achuz LeElazar. Elazar chapped one portion, one Beit Av, one father's house. VaAchuz Achuz LeItamar. Right, and Itamar got what came to him proportionally. Tiyufta de Rav Chama Bar Giora. So this refutes the position of Rav Chama Bar Giora that Moshe initially had set up 8 mishmarot. Omar lacha Rav Chama Bar Giora. So his response is, Tanaihi, it's a machloket Tanaim between the two brightiot that we saw. Va'ana d'amrei ki hai tana d'amashmona. He says, what do you want from me? There are two brightiot. One says Moshe set up 8, 4 and 4. And one says that, pardon me one second. The first brisa says Moshe set up 8, 4 and 4, and the second brisa says he set up 16. He says, what do you want from me? I have a brisa. I hold like the first brisa that there were 8. The Gemara goes on. Tanu Rabbanan. You see, we're here at the bottom. Tanu Rabbanan, Arba'a Mishmarot Alu Min HaGola. So all of that, everything we've been talking about until now is up to and including Churban Bayit Rishon. Right? From the time that Moshe sets up the Mishmarot, we're not yet in the Beit HaMikdash. We're still in the Mishkan. We're still in the Midbar. Right? We haven't even gotten to Eretz Yisrael yet. So we're talking about a lot of time, whether it goes from 8 to 16 to 24, if it goes from 16 to 24, but this expansion is covering a lot of time as the Jewish people grew and prospered. But after Churban Bayit Rishon, the whole thing went kaput. And then you have certain Jews come back to Eretz Yisrael, and Ezra and Nehemiah get the whole operation going again. So we needed to reconstitute the Mishmarot. So the Gemara says that there were only four Mishmarot, or let's say four representative families of the original Mishmarot that came back with the Shivat Zion. So there were four that came back from the diaspora, from the Galut. Elu Hain. And then they give us the names. Now, I mentioned last time that we have this list of the Mishmarot. Each Mishmar had a nickname, like the names of the teams of the soccer teams or the baseball teams, right? They were, each Mishmar was identified by this, by the name of where they came from or some other family, something distinct in the family. So who were the four Mishmarot out of 24? A small minority of Mishmarot returned after the first Galut. So who are these four families? Yidaya, Harim, Pashchur, V'Imer. Those are the names of the four Mishmarot. V'Amdu Nevi'im Shebeinehem. Turn the page. Kafchet. Kaf Zayin on Bet, Amdu Nevi'im Shebeinehem VeChilkum VeHemidum Al Esrim VeArba. And of those that came back, the Nevi'im of those days redivided them into 24 new Mishmarot. Balalam VeNatnum BeKalpi. So they take.
This is coming from Sefer Ezra, Rabbi Sachs. In other words, this is not just. This is based on what is actually said by Farish in Sefer Ezra chapter 2, verses 36 through 39. And yeah. Rashi points out right here on the daf that there's a problem, which is Pashchur may be listed in Ezra, but it's not listed
in Rayamim. Right. It's interesting that the Gemara here doesn't quote Ezra.
Right? Well, how come we can hear
Shene Emar?
Yeah, you're right. It is interesting. I'm very interested in this type of an issue because I think that the Gemara's way of quoting Tanakh is really deserving of a separate study of its own. And that's one of the reasons why I feel when you learn Akata, you have to really pay as much attention to the fine points as you do in some complicated halachic sugya. It's just that we were always brought up to think the Akada, oh, that's the time to relax from the heavy-duty stuff. So we don't basically pay mind, but the question you just asked is excellent. It's just that, most people, even if they thought about it, would just proceed to say, oh, let's move on to the next thing,
So, Bayidaya v'natal chelko v'chelek chavero sheish. Ba charim v'natal chelko v'chelek chavero sheish. V'chein pashchur v'chein imar. Well, if Imar got it last, he got whatever came to him, because that was whatever was left in the lottery. V'chein hitnu nevi'im shebeneihem sha'afilu Yehoya dayav rosh mishmeret ole lo yidache yidaya mimkomo ele yidaya ikar.
This is Yehoya Riv. There's some.
Yeah, Yehoya Riv tafelo. So that's what would happen. The Gemara says, so in Bayit Sheni, the new head of the Mishmar, the chief Mishmar is is Yedaya. But previously it had been Yehoyariv. So what would happen if descendants of that family who had previously been the main Mishmar were to come back? So the Gemara says, you snooze, you lose. You were the chief in Bayit Rishon, but if you come back, we have a new pecking order. We have a new pecking order. The Kalpi, the lottery, had determined that we have a new pecking order for the Mishmarot. And you don't come. You got to be. What's that expression they used to have for the lotto? Right. Since we're talking about a lottery here, right? You got to be in it to win it. If you want to be a player in Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael, all you have to do is buy a lottery ticket. You know what that lottery ticket is? An El Al ticket. Latus El Al. And you don't even have to buy it. They give it to you for free if you want to come on Aliyah. But if you want to be a player in what's happening in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be here. And if you're late to the game, even if you had a lot of schuyot, you had a lot of valor and merit from the past, it's the people that show up who get to be first in line and contribute to Jewish life in the new rebuilt Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that's our Zionist message for the evening.
The Gemara goes on.
What?
I said received.
Received. Okay. It wasn't directed at anyone. Wasn't directed at anyone. Only one of us happens not to be here, but it's it does play into this into that notion that, you know, some of us have been here a long time and some of us are more Johnny come lately. Although most of us, I think, are been here quite a long time at this point. But although Cecil, tell me, you've been here since when?
I don't think he heard you, Rabbi Sachs.
I think he's
been here since 1980.
So that's a long time. I think Shalom's also been here a long time. But you know how it is. The guy that came the day before you is an old timer. And the guy that came the day after you is a Johnny come lately. somebody gets off the boat the day after you, you say, well, when I came on Aliyah, things were different.
I have a small claim, Rav Sachs. My mother was born in Yerushalayim in 1914.
Okay. So were these Kohanim that went off to Galut and were late in coming back. They may have been born in...
in 1914, people had to leave because there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael during the war.
The people that left Bavel after Churban Bayit Rishon also had a good excuse for leaving.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I attempted to compare it to. The only person who stayed in Israel during the First World War of all the big shots was Agnon. Everybody else took off. Ben Gurion took off. Ben Svi took off. There was no food. My grandfather died.
What, you said Agnon?
1915. Yeah, said, Agnon stuck around. He came out in 1908.
No,
Agnon. The Agnon you know.
But you're mistaken. Agnon wasn't here during World War One. Agnon was in Germany.
That was what he was.
No, Agnon came in 1908. In 1912, he went to Germany for a period of time, but got stuck there. Because World War One broke out, and then he got married, and then Shokin came along, and he stayed in Germany until 1924 when his house burned down. And then he said, that's a sign it's time to go back. So 1912 to 1924, he was in Germany.
My professor at Columbia, Professor Barzilai, then misinformed me, and I take back what I just said. Okay. So then everybody took off. Bottom line, but I want you to know, my grandfather, my paternal grandmother, died from famine during the First World War in Eretz Israel around 1916-17.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, the way that I explain the Gemara is the way that Rashi explains the Gemara. That if one of these other mishmarot comes back, they would reconstitute their mishmar, but they would be they would be at the bottom of the line after Yehoyada after Yedaya, Yedaya and the others. But there's a Gemara in Arachin that seems to say that they wouldn't even get a Mishmar at all, having missed the initial redivision of the Kohanim into Mishmarot. They would show up and they would just be assigned to a different family's Mishmar. And then as the people grew, any individual Mishmar could be, what do you call that, subdivided into others, the way that we were told happened from Elazar in the period of Bayit Rishon, or the period of David and Shmuel. So that's a machlokus about what would happen to Johnny's come lately, who show up having missed the Aliyah Rishona back from Bavel.
I have a question about this, Rav Sacks. When you say Alum HaGola, are we talking about with Zerubbabel or with Ezra? Now, they're mentioned in Sefer Ezra, but they're dated to the time of Zerubbabel. Remember, the first section, can I go on, or you want me to stop?
You can go on. I don't know. If you have an answer, I'm happy to hear it.
Well, let's first get to these questions straight. In other words, the first six chapters of Ezra are not devoted to things that happened in Ezra's time. They're devoted primarily to things that happened, what I call the Aliyah Rishona, which is Zerubbabel's Aliyah, not the Aliyah, Ezra's Aliyah Shnia. Okay? In other words, Ezra's coming in 450 when? 450, I forgot the exact, I think 458. Nehemiah comes in 444. Zerubbabel's already coming after Hachrazak Koresh. So this Aliyah starts in 536, and you know it's under Zerubbabel's direction that the start of the Binyan of the Beit HaMikdash HaSheni begins, what we call Bayit Sheni. So when they give these people's names in Ezra, they're associated with Zerubbabel's Aliyah, not with Ezra's Aliyah. Ezra's Aliyah comes about 70 years later.
Right.
I'm just saying the plain Pashuk.
I'm sure that this question is addressed. I simply don't have the answer to it. But I'm guessing that I'll get information on this from you or from David before the night is over.
Maybe not before the night is over. It's at some point in the day.
Your night, not you have 7 extra hours.
I got a lot of other things on the board.
Okay. the Gemara again quotes back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that when the Kohanim go up for their turn for the Mishmar, the Yisrael Shabbato Mishmar mitkansim ba'areyan v'korim b'maseh breshit. The Israelites in their town, in their ma'amad, would gather in their hometown, and they had a whole procedure of what they would do that week. They would fast, and they would daven, and they would lane, and they would read from maseh breshit, from Genesis chapter 1. So the Gemara asks, minahani mili. What is the Mishnah source for this idea that they read from Maaseh Bereshit? Right? I mean, think about it. What would, like, if you had to design the program for what the Israelites would be doing while their brethren Kohanim were off doing the Avodah, what would you have them lane? What would you suggest?
That's the issue of what they should read on Rosh Hashanah, too. It's the same issue. Originally, they read B'chodesh Shatri'i B'yachal L'chodesh from Parshat Emor, just like they did in all the other Mo'adim. And then they gave that up and instead started reading from Sefer Bereshit. And,
They read things that become connected in the imagination, in the Midrashic imagination, the Chazilic imagination with Rosh Hashanah, with the birth of Yitzchak and the Kedat Yitzchak and things. There's a reason that we chose those things, even though they may not be obvious. And if you don't know of the subtext connecting it to Rosh Hashanah, it would also be a puzzle. But here,
may I suggest a reverse take on this? I think it's the opposite. I think the Midrashim came into existence as a result of the change, not the change came to an existence as a result of the Midrash. Okay? That's just my opinion. I could back that up, though.
I don't know. Okay.
I mean, they're shmaros for a week, so I guess, you know, a reading for each of the, you know, something represents the week would sort of make sense.
Oh, okay. But I would have thought they'd be reading something about the Karbanot. They'd be reading about the Korban Tamid. They'd be reading about the Avodat Beit HaMikdash. They'd be, you know, doing something that's thematically connected to what's going on in that, in the town.
But if you read that on Rosh Chodesh already, you have to come up with something else.
Why?
Because basically you're going to be, the setup, the way we're setting it up here, is that this is going to be a constant. In other words, every couple of weeks, a new group is coming in, and they have an assignment to read something. So it would seem to me that they would want to choose something that would make this in some way special and read something that isn't something that's read regularly anyway. Okay, but yeah, that doesn't answer your basic question. Your basic question is, you know, when did this begin? My feeling is the Gemara's explanation is simply this type of situation. You know, I often say that Bavli's relation to the Mishnah is something like Breishit Rabbah's relation to Sefer Breishit. They don't even know for sure why this started. So they come up with their own theory. In other words, scholarship's job is to find out just exactly, really, what was behind this, okay? Not necessarily what the Bavli's take on it might be. You know, this might have gone back hundreds of years, and at this point, the Bavli no longer even is aware of how it started, so they come up with some kind of explanation.
So, let's see what the Bavli suggests. Let's see now what the Bavli does suggest for the reason that they read Maaseh Breishit. Minahani Mili, what's the Mishnah source for this? Omer Rabbi Yaakov Baracha, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Il Mole Ma'amadot Lo Nitkaimu Shamayim Ba'aretz. The entire continuation and existence of the heavens and the earth are sustained only because of the Ma'amadot, only because of the system of the Jewish people being engaged directly and by remote to the ongoing Avodat Beit HaMikdash. So since the Ma'amadot themselves are partially responsible for the maintenance of Shamayim Va'aretz, so what's appropriate to read? The Maaseh Shamayim Va'aretz, the Maaseh Breishit, Breishit Bara Elokim et Hashamayim ve'et Ha'aretz. Shene'emar v'yomer Hashem Elokim b'ma eda ki irashenu. Avram asks the Kadosh Baruch Hu at the Brit Bein Abtarim, by what shall I know? What's my guarantee? What's my promise? What's my promise that I will inherit the land, that I will get Eretz Yisrael? Omar Avraham, Ribono shel olam, Shema Yisrael, chotin lefanecha, ata oseh lehem kedor hamabul, kedor haflaga. In other words, what's Avram asking when he says to God, how do I know you're going to keep your promise that I'm going to get Eretz Yisrael? Who asks a question like that? Who asks a Kadosh Baruch Hu if he's going to keep his promise? So Chazal say, what was Avram really asking? He was saying, no, of course, God, I know that you keep your promises, but what if my descendants won't be worthy? What if they'll sin? Maybe it'll be the destruction of the world, like at the time of the flood or at the time of the Migdal Bavel, and therefore they'll lose it out because they've lost their merits. How do I know we'll get Eretz Yisrael? Omar Avraham, Shema Yisrael Chotin Lefanecha. Omar Le, Hakadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Lav. No, it won't be. Omar Lefanav Ribono Shel Olam, Hodiani Bema Erashena. So let me know in what merit. What, even if my descendants will sin, right? What's the promise? What's the merit? What's the secret sauce that guarantees that we'll get Eretz Yisrael? Omar lo kechali la mishuleshet ve'ez mishuleshet v'chule. And Akadosh Baruch Hu there at the Brit Bein Haptarim, in Breishit Perek Tedvav, tells him, take this animal and make this sacrifice and take that animal and take that sacrifice. And from this, we understand that the sacrifices are the merit by which we maintain our achiza, to go back to that word from earlier in the evening, that we maintain our hold on the land of Israel. Amar lefanav Ribono Shel Olam, Tenach bizman shebeit hamikdash kayam. So Avram has an answer for everything. He's so Jewish. He says, okay, so when is Beit HaMikdash and we do Korbanot and the merit of the Korbanot, we're able to hold on to Eretz Yisrael. But that's not always going to be the case. Bizman she'en Beit HaMikdash kayam, ma tehe aleihem. What can we do? In other words, if our only merit to hold on to Eretz Yisrael and the Korbanot, what's our solution for when there is no Beit HaMikdash and there is no Korbanot? Amar lo kvar tikanti lehem seder Korbanot. Bizman she'korin behem lefanai, so it's true. You might not be able to actually slaughter an animal, but you know what a Jew can always do? We can always talk about it. We don't need to actually do things if we can talk about it, if we can learn about it, if we can daven it. So you can't bring the korban. Say the korbanot. If you say the korbanot, it's like you did them. And ani mochel lehem al kol avonoteihem. And I will forgive them for all their sins. They will achieve the same kapara as if they had offered the sacrifice merely by reciting the sacrifices. Many people observe this, that, you know, in the siddur in the morning, we have all of the korbanot, in the preliminary morning service before the first kaddish. And that's the stuff, you know, it's kind of funny. I remember in America, if davening started at 7:30, you got there at 7:30 and nothing was happening. And people are putting on their tefillin, and then whoever's the chazan, there'd be sometimes 8-10 minutes before the first Kaddish. While people were saying all of those preliminary morning things, people say, besides brachos, obviously you have to say brachos. You have to say Birkat HaTorah and Birkat HaShachar, but all the other stuff, the Arkadah and the Korban Shel Tamid, and the all of the other selections from the morning service that are in there. So what happens in Israel? In almost every shul that I know of, they say Minyan starts at 7:30. What happens at 7:30? That's the first Kaddish. That's Rabbi Shmuel Omer. And if you want to put on your tefillin and talis, and if you want to say brachos and karbanos and etc., that's on your own cheshbon. You have to show up 10 minutes earlier for however long you want to dedicate to that. So what happens,
does that here,
what happens
Rabbi
a lot? What Chabad? So what happens a lot of times is that people skip the korbanot, but it's dafka, the recitation of the korbanot, which serves as the merit through which we maintain our connection to Eretz Yisrael. So there's something a little ironic about that. People should be careful at least to recite the torba, the tamid shel shachar every morning. In the Korban Tamid, the paragraph about the Korban Tamid, minimally, that has to be recited every morning. So what's the point here? It's the Korbanot that keep us in Eretz Yisrael. And when we don't have the Korbanot, it's the learning about the Korbanot. Shalma parm sfatenu, that if you can't do it, we can learn about it. We can talk about it. That's the greatness of the Jewish imagination in exile, in the words of the great Heine, the portable homeland in the text. When we didn't have Eretz Yisrael, and even today when we have Eretz Yisrael, but we don't have it the way that we want it, we don't have it all, we don't have exactly the way we once had it, well, we still have the portable homeland. You see how they make this Tanakh nice and small? You can fit it into your pocket, right? That's what sustained us. We were the only nation that didn't have a homeland, but remained a nation and a culture and a faith, because we were able to take the homeland with us. That's the power of the Jewish imagination. But because the Ma'amadot were doing this, they sustain not just the land of Israel, but the entirety of the heaven and the earth. It happens that right now is Tafhei Elul, the 25th of Elul. Tonight starts the 25th of Elul, which is in fact Maase Breshit. Hayom Harat Olam is a metaphor. Rosh Hashanah is not the beginning of the creation of the heavens and the earth. It's the creation of mankind. And the 25th of Adar, the 25th of Elul, counting backwards, is the first day of of creation. So it's appropriate that we learn this Gemara now on the 25th of Elul, Likrat Rosh Hashanah. As I said at the beginning, we won't have Shir next week or for the next couple of weeks because of the Yom Tov schedule, but it's fitting that we end on this particular note because what we do together, learning Torah together, also contributes to the maintenance and sustenance of ourselves and our families and of the Jewish people. So on this occasion, Erev Rosh Hashanah, Tavshin Pei Gimel, I'll remind you how grateful I am to all of you for the opportunity to learn together almost every week, year after year. It's a great privilege for me, and I appreciate that. And I wish everybody a Shana Tova, full of lots of good health and happiness and good things for you and your families and for all Am Yisrael. And we will continue together in the new year. So Shana Tova.
All right, Jesus.
Shana Tova.
Thank you.
Shana Tova.
Rabbi, I wanted to say something. I daven Nusafari.
Who's speaking? Bracha? Who's that?
Yeah, Bracha. Yeah. I daven Nusafari every morning, and I do not skip the Korbanos. I go straight through.
You know
where the 25th of Elul was mentioned in Tanakh?
What?
That's a Tanakh Chidon question. Where is the 25th of Elul actually mentioned in Tanakh?
What's the answer?
Answer? It's the day Nehemiah completed the rebuilding of the Chomah. Fits perfectly with your Dvar Torah, as well as what we learned today about Shivat Siyam.
And if I could add one thing, by the way, you mentioned about Yom Harat HaOlam. You said it was a metaphor. Yom Harat HaOlam, actually, Harat HaOlam is when the world was conceived. There's a machloket whether the world was created in Tishrei or in Nisan. Right. And the most of the Rashi and others seem to conclude that it probably was created in Nisan. Yom Harat HaOlam was the day it was conceived. It wasn't the day it was created, the same way, you know, you have the difference in conception and birth. Mm-hmm. So technically that phrase, even though the phrase Harat HaOlam has a different meaning in the Tanakh, which I'm sure Yehudi would point out, I wrote about that as well, but Harat HaOlam is not necessarily the day the world was created, but rather the day it was conceived. So it sort of makes sense that the world was actually created in Nisan instead of Tishrei, just in terms of the rebirth of the, you know, coming out of the winter, coming, you know, the day that when nature is reborn, sort of fits the season a little bit more.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova. Thanks very much.